This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The gap between the poor and the middle class seems to be growing, and so does the inability of each to comprehend the other. My guest Gerald Ladd has written a memoir called Out of the Madness about what it was like to grow up in a vermin-infested housing project in West Dallas. His young mother devoted more time to getting her next fix than to raising her children. In 1989, when he was 19, Ladd was the subject of a newspaper column that described how he patrolled the project to keep away crack dealers in return for free rent. Ladd later showed some of his own writing to the columnist. This led to an article by Ladd about growing up in the projects, which was published in Dallas Life magazine. It won the National Essay of the Year Award from the Sunday Magazine Editors Association and was expanded into his new book. Here's a short reading about the place where he grew up.
The vast projects were divided into three groups, Elmer Scott, George Loving, and Edgar Wards, with a network of trails connecting them. Eight apartments were carved from each unit and numbered like jail cells. Made of bricks, they looked as if someone took a few old dirty chimneys, molded them together, and cut out windows. Clotheslines crossed in the backyards. Inside, roaches and rats roamed throughout the night in our icebox closets and beds. Spiders and their webs were in every corner. The toilets always flooded. We sometimes relieved ourselves outside on the ground. Hot water was rare. Didn't matter to me. I never took baths anyway. There was heat, but no air conditioning. Some families had fans that they placed in wide open windows to bring in the cooler air when it was cooler. Others had old-fashioned blow fans that stored insulated water in small water tanks, but most families, like mine, had nothing. On long, hot Texas nights, Junior and I usually tossed, turned, and sweated, unless a cool late-night breeze brought us temporary relief. We would lie awake sometimes, waiting on that breeze, but when it passed us by, we would toss and sweat all night. Then the heat would wake us early in the morning. Noise echoed throughout the units day and night, with everyone sitting on his or her porch when the apartments became unbearably hot. Radios would blare music, mostly blues and mellow jazz. Crowds of young lusty boys and teenage girls with their babies would gather on the corners, on porches, and in parked cars, but never too close to the dope dealers. Since there were few street lights that worked, the dark darkness gave the place an eerie, wasted look. Teenage boys roamed through the three sections late at night to visit girls or the marijuana house in George Loving. Fights, rapes, and arguments were as common as the fear and grief that gripped this place.
That's Gerald Ladd reading from his new memoir, Out of the Madness. Gerald, your mother was a heroin addict. How old were you when you realized that she used?
I must have been between the ages of 7 and 11, and I realized it based on the observations of other children in the projects who had begun to call my mother a whore and a drug addict to my face and use other unacceptable terms, what we commonly refer to as cursing. Your mother is a, for example. Also, when the streams of men to begin to frequent our household, the ways of smoke and the cesspool type environment. When I got of age and of mind and began to understand why my household was different and began to understand why the money that we received from the federal government and the money which my father was sending for child support was all disappearing.
One of the things that was really disturbing was that your mother was first turned on by her mother. It was your grandmother that gave your mother her first shot of heroin.
I heard the story from my mother when I asked her how in God's name did she ever become hooked on drugs. And she told me about the episode of her mother taking her into a bathroom and telling her this is a remedy for a headache. I know something that will help ease your pain from the separation and trials you're having with your husband, who was my father, Paul Ladd. I know what will ease the burden of the tremendous odds of your attempting to survive and correct your life in the projects. And she showed her how to mix the batter and how to squeeze the clear liquid into a needle and inject the drugs into her arm.
And your mother told you that story?
Yes, she told me that story when I was a teenager.
Since your mother was a junkie, were there a lot of drug dealers who came to the house and brought trouble and danger with them?
I saw my mother on many occasions scared that someone would come into our house and kill us all. On several occasions, men would steal the little possessions we have. One tried to rape my sister, woke us up late at night, dragging a black rapist on our back. He had to come into our house on a night when my mother was out on one of her merry adventures and saw no adult was present, and attempted to rape my sister. So she managed to struggle and fall on our bed, waking me and my brother. And this man made us stand over at the corner and kept telling my sister to come with him out of the room for whatever purposes he had in mind. But my brother bravely stepped forward, and we were children like 9, 10, and 11, and told him no matter what he did to us boys, he would not harm one hair on my sister's head. We were very hardened then, and I believe if that man would have continued to try to attack one of us, we probably would have stabbed him with one of the kitchen butcher knives or hit him in the head with a hammer. We had been through so much, and we were so steeled that we were capable of that, even at that age, to preserve our lives. One night, I came to my house after playing in the neighborhood, and when I opened the screen door, this drug dealer kicked me hard between my legs on my private parts. He kicked me so hard it caused me to fly back through the air and land on the ground with a thud. Afterward, I had uncontrollable urination as I sat there watching him reaching for his revolver, and he pointed it at me. And I think I was between 9 and 11 then. And then he recognized me, and he did not pull the trigger. He was some panicky dope dealer visiting our house and knowing the kind of danger he was placing himself in by dealing drugs, and inadvertently thought I was someone coming to get him.
You must have been so angry with your mother in spite of the fact that you loved her. Mothers are supposed to protect their children, not bring danger to their children.
Mothers are supposed to have fair chances in society. My mother was just as much as a victim as we were. When she was 14 years old, her mother required her to drop out of school, go to work, and to help with her 6 brothers and sisters. She cleaned, cooked, and washed instead of having exposure to the academic curriculum that would have cultivated her mind, or being able to play the nonsense games that little girls love to play. So, and mothers, daughters normally, naturally follow in the footsteps of their mother. So if the mother is not only being sinister and doing drugs, but actually leading, debauching her own child into the same habits, then the child is without chance. I compare my mother's experience like taking an infant by the feet and tossing it into the wilderness and expecting that infant to rear it herself. That my mother had the strength even to encourage us at the critical points of our life says a lot about the character of that she possessed and the nature and indomitability of the human capacity.
What made you decide that you didn't want to be like your mother, that you didn't want to be a junkie?
How could I have chosen that lifestyle? Seeing the effects, having the primary evidence laid out before me, seeing the results of how it literally destroyed the black communities in the projects and other such marked communities. And I vowed at a very young age, if I did nothing else, I would never ever become like these people.
How old were you when you vowed that you wouldn't become that way?
I was very, very young, very, very young, and but mature because of the circumstances. And I must have been no more than 7, 8, 9 years old.
So did you ever try drugs yourself?
Although I've experimented with marijuana for several months, I've never done drugs. I've never been in trouble with the law.
What about your friends? Did you watch them do it and worry for them?
Similarly, none of my friends have ever done drugs besides some casual drinking and smoking of marijuana, because each of us realize what that kind of habit and what the consuming of drugs and alcohol has done. We have primary evidence, firsthand observation. We have the most brutal kind of experience you can have, and that's to sit there and watch and see drugs and crime destroy people and destroy communities. So if one could see this, if one could see his sister fall into a hole and be consumed, why would he choose that path if he can apply wisdom? And not only why would he choose that path, but why would he not warn others of that danger?
Yet in your memoir, you write that there was a time when you considered selling dope.
Yes, the considered and doing are two different things, but the odds were so monumental of one extricating himself out of that kind of abject, impoverished environment. I was starving, virtually, nearly homeless, looking for work 10, 15 hours a day, watching my mother steadily deteriorate, watching my sister and my brother hopeless, watching the police abuse our rights and beat the crap out of us, watching all the people in the complex where I was living losing hope. And at that time, I thought long and hard about selling drugs. I wanted to get in for just a spat and make enough money just to get some resources and go back to school. But I still chose not to do it, even though I couldn't buy myself a bologna sandwich.
My guest is Gerald Ladd. He's written a new memoir called Out of the Madness. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Gerald Ladd. He's written a memoir called Out of the Madness, From the Projects to a Life of Hope. He's 24 years old and lives in Dallas. There were times when you needed money bad and you'd steal or turn to one of various hustles for it. How were you introduced to doing that?
I was introduced to stealing by an adult whom my mother sent me to borrow a cigarette. And at that time, I was desperate for everything. So I asked this adult, I said, "Hey, my mother wants to know if she can borrow a cigarette." And I remember him looking toward the heavens, acting as if he didn't hear me or had not heard me. And all of a sudden, he snapped and he made some remarks stating that he knew how to help me get some money and to get my mother all the cigarettes she wanted. And you know what he did?
What did he do?
He took me into the house of some Asian Americans living in the projects and took me to their only thing of value, their TV set, and made me help him carry it out to his car and take it to some drug dealers who would take anything of value in exchange for their dope. And that was his way of giving me an example of how to get the things I needed for my mother, even if they were cigarettes.
So did you end up doing that a lot?
No, that was the only experience I had with doing that. But on days when my hunger would not let me rest, and days when I couldn't find work in the projects of West Dallas, I would go to the shopping center and steal sardines or bags of rice, anything that could quench that unquenchable hunger. And I also would take my brother, or my brother would join me, rather, and we would do things like that. But keep in mind, even before I ever even stole a bag of rice or a can of sardines, I would go up there to the store and beg the people to let me take out their groceries, walk up and down the industrial streets of Dallas begging anyone for work. I'm 13 or 14 years old. Any kind of work, sweeper, hold a sign out in front of your door all day. But I had not yet met the age requirement for legitimate employment, so I was often turned down.
So your attitude was, if I can't legally find a way to get some food, I'll get it illegally.
No, my attitude was, I could not starve, I must eat.
Mm-hmm. You're very smart and you write very well. When did you realize that you had that gift? Were you interested in school?
I was always interested in school, but throughout my upbringing in my short 24 years, I've remarkably always witness and saw evidence of the capacity of humans. I've met many potential engineers and lawyers and doctors and philosophers, priests, just all of the various professions and contributions one can make to society and to organized civilization. But one by one, all of them were destroyed in one way or the other. All their talent, their ambition, their potential brilliance was snuffed out so thoroughly about the elements in that kind of environment. But I persevered, and I developed a love for reading, and through reading I got exposure to what I term dead literary role models like Malcolm X and Marcus Garvey. One of my favorites is a Renaissance philosopher named Pico Mirandola, wrote The Dignity of Man. His work asserted that man is neither completely godly nor terrestrial, but somewhere in the middle, and that he can ascend to the highest heights or sink to the lowest depths according to his will.
Did your friends think that you were odd for reading that much?
Well, many of my friends read just as often as I. I know a lot of avid, voracious readers. So, in fact, my friends and I would share literature, exchange literature, debate on the theories in the literature we read. So it's a wrong stigma to think that most young people in impoverished communities don't have the desire to read, because they do. But the hardest thing ever in my life was trying to read or concentrate on school when I had a 3-day-old hunger headache.
You know, in your book you write, a lot of people said, you're smart, you're talented, you should make something of yourself, but none of them ever said how to do it. So how did you figure out how to take your interests, literature, writing, and channel it into something, try to get published? What clues did you have about how to do that?
I developed the philosophy early on, after hearing these remarks so often, that you can do this and you must be twice as good as your counterpart, the white man, in order to succeed. But no one would ever explain to me how. It's always that you must, and you're talented and you're good, but how do I go about this? No one ever did. So I took it upon myself to seek out the rare mentors, which were mostly dead people in books, to get the examples that I should have been exposed to all my adolescent and teenage years, and my young adult years coming up, my young adult years forming my character, my young adult years forming my values. But I had to take this upon myself.
What kind of jobs did you hold along the way to make a living before you started writing?
Most of them were menial, busing tables, sweeping floors, maintenance, anything, any place where I could get hired and get any kind of income to supply the rudimentary requirements of you, just basic core survival, you know, housing, food, clothing, bus fare. I would work 15, 20 hours a day, store clerk. It didn't matter, drag myself home, walk 3 and 4 miles to and from work when I didn't have bus fare, was just starting a job. And this is, in essence, the kind of desire I've seen in every person. But when you see them, when you hear about them through the media, they're on the end. They've done all this. They've given up. They're on the edge of despair, and they're saying, no, I won't do this anymore. I won't push myself to the edge, to the brink of insanity. I'm going to sit here and get some rest for a while. I'm going to go on a corner and get some camaraderie, some love, some support. And that's when the media in America depicts them. That's when you see them. And that's when you see the stereotypes. Oh, they're lazy and they're doing nothing. They're sitting there drinking. But they're tired. They've been struggling all their lives. And they know that within themselves they have the capacity just like any other human. But they are being denied. And they're on the edge of insanity, so they're saying, let me rest for a while.
Where do you live now? Do you live in the project still?
No, I no longer live in the projects. I still have several close friends there, but I still live in a community that's stigmatized here in Dallas. It's called South Dallas, and South Dallas is the, let's say, black version of a suburb. South Dallas has a diverse mixture of a lower class and lower middle class people, and it's very, very close to the central core of the spirit of black communities.
And what's your mother's situation now?
My mother's situation is excellent. She lives with me. My mother is fully reformed. Her capabilities are fully being exposed. She attends school now, GED classes. She's very active in church. She wants me to find a way to get her a drug rehabilitation center and design it around her theories, because she feels like she, from her experiences, is able to help people from her background. And also, my mother's very active and involved with her grandchildren. I can hardly get out of bed today without her ironing my clothes or making sure I have a good breakfast or taking my messages. And that proved everything to me, that she could achieve if she had the right kind of support and was placed in an environment where she had some resources. As soon as I placed her there, she demonstrated that excellent example.
What kind of environment did you place her in?
One where she had a house.
Was it a rehabilitation center or a nice house?
The environment was a home with a son who cared about her and some money in the bank, transportation to work and school and from the doctor, a house that wasn't blazing hot because you didn't have air conditioner in this hot Texas heat that often gets over 100 degrees. You can sleep comfortably after struggling all day. Just the very simple, basic resources she took and responded to.
Gerald Ladd, his new memoir is called Out of the Madness. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.